Welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carlin, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases. Dr. Rebecca Carlin.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by PBS Radio, its staff, or management, but represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information that I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you, after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced diseases, please go to the www.drcarly.com and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I went from being a surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. I do consults for people and pets with autoimmune diseases and cancer to teach them how to reverse these problems with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and do everything based on history alone. You do not have to come to North Carolina to see me. Please call me at the number on my website if you would like to learn how I do consults. I take calls every day, 7 days a week, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I ask you to consider the information that myself and my guests give using your own God-given common sense and discern the truth for yourself. I love to answer your questions, and there's a lot of new numbers now on the station, too, which we're on, that you can call in. So let me just go through those quickly. Toll-free, USA and Canada, 888-228-4494. Worldwide, toll-free, 877-489-6350. There's also three direct lines, and you can also call through Skype or Paltalk. So I suggest that you go to the BBS Station 2 homepage, and you'll find all those numbers there because I'm sure I went through them too fast. Anyways, before I forget, I just want to let you know, starting next week on Thanksgiving, I'm moving up a half an hour. So the show will be on at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 5 p.m. Pacific Time starting next week. Okay. Feel free to call in if you have any questions or if you have any experiences about the subject we're going to talk about tonight. You can use only your first name if you would like, and all shows are archived. Every week I will answer the question, what is ailing America, with a different response, as well as share the good news of what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet, for awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware not only that inoculations are the true weapons of mass destruction, but as you're going to further learn tonight, that the courts are totally corrupt. Everything is turned around 180 degrees from what the purpose of these agencies and different taxpayer-induced things that we have to keep our country in a rule of law. They're 180 degrees around from what they're supposed to do. They're now protecting the wrongdoers. And it's really not acceptable, and we have to just say no. So I can only show you the door. You have to walk through it, and I will just ask, how far down the rabbit hole are you willing to go? But you must be uplifted, as the weak little puppets of darkness are being made visible to the public eye through shows such as this, and the once feeble calls for cease and desist is now a roaring outcry. The title of tonight's show, What's Ailing America, the answer is probate murders and war on the vulnerable through the courts. And before I bring my special guest, Janet Phelan, on, a wonderful reporter, the kind of reporter that we're supposed to have. She actually did a show with me on dual water lines on September 27th, Water as a Weapon of Genocide, so you can always go to the archives to listen to that wonderful show. But before I bring her on, I want to just mention a couple of things. tonight as I was getting ready for the show and I had the news on, it was really quite amazing. There was a reporter that came on from Plainview, Long Island, which is actually where I hail from and where I was practicing medicine before I moved to Florida, talking about a doctor by the name of Finkelstein, who has been accused by the New York State Department of Health of reusing syringes and needles on 630 patients, all of whom were sent letters to be immediately tested for hepatitis and AIDS. He is still practicing, as the New York State Medical Board has not revoked his license. And this is the same medical board that covered up the sexual abuse of over 100 autistic children and forced the New York State Legislature to pass a law mandating they report criminal doctors, and who also went after me because of my public access TV show, claiming, because they had no other excuse as to why they should go after me, that I have a delusion of conspiracy. So I just want to throw that in there, folks. This is what the medical mafia is doing. They're letting doctors who are reusing syringes and needles continue to practice medicine. I mean, it's really amazing. You just have to, you know, ask yourself, how could this possibly be? And the one other thing I want to mention before I bring our special guest on, I'm sure many of you have heard about the story, what's going on in Prince George's, Maryland. There's now a situation there where the parents of more than 2,300 students who failed to get their vaccinations are actually going to be fined up to $50 a day and up to 10 days in jail if their children do not get inoculated. And what they actually want to do is have an emergency hearing this weekend, and they're going to have vaccinators at the court, and the judge is going to threaten to put the parents in jail if they do not inoculate their children with disease. Now, two things I just want to mention about this. If you're not on my updates list, and you can get on that very easily, you just go to drcarly.com and stick in your email. You can unsubscribe at any time. And it's funny how many people unsubscribe after I send out certain blasts, like I sent out a mainstream media story today on chemtrails, and I got about five people that unsubscribed. You know, people are just so filled with fear. But you have to understand what's going on, folks. It's a matter of life or death. But two things I wanted to mention about this. I actually spent the entire day yesterday in the Washington Post chat room, their discussion board, going back and forth with a pharmaceutical shill by the name, let's see, he wouldn't give his name. He refused to give his name, but his call letters are, as far as the discussion board, BevGims1, BevGims1. And if you can get on the Washington Board comments section and read the back and forth between myself and him and everybody else, because, see, that's what you have to realize. They have shills that go into these discussion boards that are trying to distract you and point you over there. And it was so obvious in this case. It's really a very good learning tool. I was going to send the whole thing out to my blast, but unfortunately when I printed it out, it was 34 pages, so that's a little bit much for all of you to read. But you can just go on the Washington Post discussion board and read the comments there. You'll really get an education in how these minions work. And one of the funniest things was I had written a whole bunch of comments about inoculations, you know, quoting the medical books themselves. And what does this minion come up with? He basically states, there's a lot to discuss, but before we do, let me ask you about homeopathy. So this is a perfect example of what they do. And I did ask BevGims1 to call in tonight and identify himself, and feel free to, prove me wrong. Of course, nobody can prove me wrong because the documents on my website are right out of the medical book. So if you'd like to get an education in how the shills work, because they're in all these discussion groups, folks, all these Yahoo groups, they're provocateurs and all these minions, they're in there. And once you realize that that's what's happening, then you can find them, you can see them. They really kind of stand out quite obviously. Now, one of the most amazing aspects of this whole situation down there in Prince George's, Maryland, is that, as it turns out, the state attorney by the name of Glenn Ivey, who's actually threatening to have these parents arrested, did an interview today, and as it turns out, they're not getting arrested because they're not vaccinating their children. Because, you see, there actually is no law that states you must inoculate your children with disease. There is no law. They try to make you believe there is and get exemptions, but there is no law. But, you see, the trick that they're using is that they threw them out of school because they didn't have the shots. And so they're going after them criminally because their children are truant. And so this is, you know, pretty amazing that they've actually thought of this new technique to try to, you know, force your children to get a very dangerous treatment against your wishes. But what I wanted to just mention is that although the state attorney is preparing to bring charges against the parents, he's admitted that there are no laws which make failure to have children vaccinated illegal, as I said. And after he was asked, isn't it really true that there's no law, you have to take the vaccines, but if you're truant, that's when criminal penalties kick in, and he said yes. So, of course, it's the schools that threw the children out. They're the ones that created the truants. And the most amazing thing, though, is when he actually stated on the air that he personally prevented his own children from getting the very same vaccines that parents may go to jail for not allowing their children to receive in Prince George's County. So if this isn't pure evil, and can you just imagine a man who would do something like that, who knows vaccines are dangerous, who won't get his own children inoculated with disease, but he'll put you in jail for not inoculating yours. You know, this is the kind of world we live in now, folks, and that's why we have to hold these people accountable and you know, get rid of people like that. You know, fire them. We don't need public servants such as Mr. Glenn Ivey. Okay, we have a caller on the line. Please speak up. Are you there? Hello? Okay, we can't hear you, so I don't know what the problem is. Maybe you could call back in. I can't hear you at all. Okay, in the meantime, let me bring on our special guest, as I said, Janet Phelan, a reporter who is now back in Los Angeles investigating this amazing series of cases, although it's not really amazing because it's going on all over the country. And I've done shows with a few other people about this legal abuse of families. But the reason that this show is so powerful is because Janet, as a reporter, is obviously an unbiased observer and a true reporter, one who goes in and investigates things and, you know, finds out what the true facts are. Because, you see, when people get embroiled in these court situations, you know, they say this and the courts say that. And so if you're not aware of the corruption that actually goes on, you know, how are you possibly going to believe the families? You're going to figure there must be something they're not telling us. You know, there's a smoking gun somewhere. They're really bad people, and they just are saying that the courts are the bad, you know, situation. But these documents that you sent me, Janet, were totally amazing. And I guess the caller is back. Are you there, caller?
Yes, Dale and Kathy in Arizona.
I'm sorry?
Yes, this is Dale and Kathy in Arizona.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me now?
What can we do?
Yeah, this is Dale and Kathy in Arizona, and we just wanted to call in and hear what your speaker had to say.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure if the station's going to want you to listen on the phone because that's going to tie up one of the lines. I'll let them talk to you. If that's fine with them, that's fine with me. Are you aware that you can also listen on the Internet?
We're not successful getting in that way.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll let the producer, you know, talk to you. If that's okay with him, it's fine with me. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. So let me bring Janet on, and we can start talking about this amazing investigation that she's been doing in Los Angeles. And these are very strong words that you're using, Janet, the probate murders. And, of course, I know this is going on. One thing that really amazed me was on page 2 of your probate murders story that you published, this term, this plan that they've come out with, isolate, immobilize, and euthanize. And that is exactly what they're doing. And I guess I would just like you to kind of just give an overview of the whole situation, how you got involved in this, and what your, you know, investigation has shown thus far.
Right. I became aware of this because what happened to my mother. And I then began to be aware that that this field, which is the field of conservatorship and guardianship, is a field that is ripe for abuse. Now, a conservator is defined by Black's Law Dictionary as a guardian, protector, or preserver. And conservators are typically appointed through a court when a person is deemed, in some sense, incapacitated and unable to look out for themselves. This generally is a situation that elderly people may find themselves in or disabled people may find themselves in. And traditionally, if there isn't a family member or a loving friend to step up to the plate, the court may appoint a professional conservator. Now, what has happened, how this has devolved, is into a situation where some very greedy and unscrupulous people have utilized this process to enrich themselves at the expense of the vulnerable elderly or the vulnerable disabled. And this generally gets instituted when the vulnerable party has some money. The conservators get paid for their services. And I came down from Medford, Oregon, where I'm now living and working at the American's Bulletin, to do some research in Redlands Courthouse. All of the probate in San Bernardino County is now going in, is being heard in Redlands Courthouse. And the reason I chose Redlands is because what I understand is that it really is the worst case scenario in that court. There is a group that has been formed. It's a national group called the National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse. This is a national group. This problem is happening everywhere in the union. But it does appear that the Redlands Courthouse has really turned this into an assembly line. A couple of things are happening that I see in these conservatorship cases. One is that the profit, the greed motive of the unscrupulous attorneys and conservators is getting a free rein. And unfortunately, it does appear that some of the clients are dying before their time. And I will back that up later on in the show with some case histories, of which I have the paperwork in front of me right now. So, to begin with, in California, a couple of years ago, there was a big expose on the front page of the L.A. Times. It ran for several days, called Guardians for Profit. And it took a look at the conservatorship programs and how some unscrupulous parties were apparently really taking advantage of their clients. Unfortunately, the L.A. Times expose series, in my estimation, fell short of going the distance in terms of a couple of things here. Number one, the fact that people are dying because of the quote-unquote care the conservators are ordering for their clients. That would be medical care and so on. And number two, the level of complicity and collusion going on through the mechanisms that are supposed to provide oversight to the conservators. That would be the courts, the DAs, and the Attorney General. And what I have found here is a level of consistent collusion, which indicates to me that these conservators, or at least some of these conservators, are being given a carte blanche to rob, pillage, and plunder. Now,
yes.
I want to go over here with something I have in front of me. This, I have been going through these files for a couple of weeks now in Redlands Court, which is where all the probate in San Bernardino is taking place. And I'm finding some really rather startling consistent strains here in terms of financial matters. And one of the issues that I've been looking at is the probate properties. People get elderly, they often have homes. If they go into conservatorship, that means that the conservator makes all the decisions for the party. The conserved person is basically reduced to a zero in terms of being able to impact decisions over his or her own life. They are considered, you know, incapacitated, and the conservator steps in to make the financial and very often the personal decisions. Now, here I'm going to read here. This has to do with one particular conservatorship organization, which is called Conservatorship and Resources for the Elderly. Its president is Melody Scott. It is located at 25 East State Street in Redlands, California. And this woman, Melody Scott, is considered the most powerful conservator in California. Now, she's doing some very interesting things. She and her partner, which is a man named Larry Dean, he's a co-conservator with CARE Incorporated, they're doing some very interesting things in terms of properties. Now, the homes of the conservatees are being assessed at far under market value and being sold at far under the appraisal rate. Now, I have here a couple of names. I'm just going to give this as exemplary. A woman named Maddie Kirby went under conservatorship with this CARE organization, Conservatorship and Resources for the Elderly. She had a home at 1028 West 9th Street in San Bernardino. It was assessed $65,000. That's impossible. And it sold at $43,000. There's a person here.
Well, wait, who bought the home?
We're getting there, okay? What they're doing is they're flipping properties, okay? They're selling them, and then they're turning around and reselling them at a more reasonable price, and then pocketing the money. And that's how they're doing this. Now, there's another one here. Yeah. Elmer Archie Heath had a home at 23538 Court Street in San Bernardino, appraised at $60,000, give me a break, sold at $28,600. I mean, this is highway robbery here. Another person here, Willie Williams, had a home at 2249 Adams in San Bernardino, assessed at $60,000, sold at $40,000. Now, what I'm attempting to do with this research on the properties is to, after I go through and get the list of the APN numbers, which are the parcel numbers, then just go into the tax assessor's office and trace the property histories and find out who's buying them and who's flipping them. Now, one thing I can tell you already is that I have looked just, briefly at some names coming up with the tax assessor's office. One name is J. David Horsepool. That is the attorney who handles most of the CARE cases. And this man has property running through him like nobody's business. There's one property he owned it for 2 weeks, another one he owned for 2 months. This is laundering. Okay? Now, I have not traced these all back to the probate properties, but this is what I'm trying to do here to show the financial angle of how people are basically being robbed. Now, there are other issues here. There was a conservatee named Una Haley. It appeared that she had two properties, one at 3167 North I Street in San Bernardino, another on Peachtree in Yucaipa. They both sold for about $119,000, but only one even goes into the accounting. So where did the money go from the other property sale? It doesn't even appear in the accounting. So there's some things going on here that are simply looking far too suspicious. There's another issue here that I have.
Can I just point one, Janet? If I could just point one thing out,
it
just came to me. Not only are they doing this, turning over these properties, and just stealing these clients blind, but they're also charging exorbitant fees for their services. And so the little bit of money that they're getting for their houses, I'm sure much of it has to go back to these conservators for their fees, for their services.
Oh, well, this is it, because this is exactly it. And the fees, there's some very interesting things going on about the fees as well. I have been looking at some of the accountings, and most of the accountings are having some protests by the probate examiners, who are the ones who are supposed to, you know, determine whether the accountings are fair. There was one, once again, these CARE people, the Melody Scotts and Larry Deans, they had petitioned the court for over $7,500 for fees, and the probate examiner came back and said $650 would be reasonable. And what we're seeing is inflated fees. We're also seeing notations in the accountings that are obviously fraudulent. For example, in one case, Melody Scott charged for several hundred dollars for doing an inventory and appraisal of a home, then went to court 2 years later and said, "I'm so sorry, I forgot to do the inventory and appraisal." But both she and her attorney were billing the estate for preparing a document, which they later went to court and told the court they neglected to do. So we, you know, these are just isolated, you know, reports right here concerning this, but the fraud appears to be massive.
I just want to mention another thing, just to highlight to the listeners. In the documents that you sent me, the articles that you've written thus far, the people have to realize that a lot of times these elderly people have family members who love them and want to take care of them. And this story that you told about this Megan, this story is unbelievable, how her father's own law firm actually ended up trying to basically, you know, sue her and take everything she had because she was fighting with them to basically get control over her mother's care, who they eventually did end up killing her, obviously. I'm sure you'll talk about that. But I just wanted to make that clear to the listeners that it's not like these elderly people have no one. They have family members that want to take care of them. And what ends up happening is in order to get the conservators in there, they, you know, make up some sham charges against the family member and put restraining orders on them. And the family members are prevented from even visiting their families. Isn't that also true?
Unfortunately, that is true. Now, it is very easy to get a restraining order. And when these conservators who have so much money and so much influence and obviously so much political clout stride into court and say, that person's a problem and needs to be restrained, the judge simply rubber stamps it. As they are rubber stamping the accounting. They are also rubber stamping the accountings that the probate examiners are protesting are inaccurate and fraudulent. The judges are rubber stamping. So if there is a protective party, a daughter, a concerned son who becomes alarmed at the treatment of the elderly person, that person doesn't go to court and get justice. That person goes to court and gets restrained by allegations made by the conservator, which are, again, rubber-stamped by the judges. Now,
exactly. The whole system is involved. Yes, I heard we have a caller. Is there a question or a comment? Caller, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I was waiting to hear when you were done.
Well,
go ahead, are you ready for me?
If you have a comment, yeah, go ahead and make a comment if you'd like.
Dr. Carl, I wanted to say that I've been following the comments on the Washington Post, and I wanted to say, you know, congratulations and kudos to you for doing a job well done. I'm very curious to find out on whether or not, you know, and I'm referring now to the situation that's going on in Maryland. I'm curious to find out on whether or not the parents knew that a religious exemption was available in Maryland or not. Obviously, a better way could have been handled with the situation than what has been done. At the same time, I think that all that it also, you know, kind of like goes to show other people in other states at what can happen when they don't know their law.
Well, not only that, but I can assure you that, you see, they do things like this to put fear into people, because other people all over the country are going to hear about this case, and they're going to say, oh, my God, it's not worth it. I'm just going to get my children inoculated. I don't want to go to jail. But that, you know, that's very true what you're saying. I'm hoping that somebody's reaching these people and telling them about their rights, because you see how little time the judge is giving them. Supposedly, they're going to be taken to court this weekend and have the children forced to be inoculated right there in the courtroom, which is so totally insane. I mean, these inoculations can cause death. And especially if these children have never been inoculated, they may want to catch them up. They could be giving them 10 vaccines at one time. Who knows what they're going to do? So I
I'm in full agreement with you. I just want to let you know that I do not live in Maryland, but I was pissed off enough about the situation that I contacted the governor of Maryland. I also contacted the school board, and I can tell you that when I called the school board that I got hung up on, people need to start reading their state constitution. If they have the ability to recall their elected officials, they need to start doing that. People need to start standing up.
I totally agree. Yes,
and I just
want to
let you know that I think that you are doing a wonderful job, and keep it up.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Yes, you are, Dr. Carley. Keep it up.
Thank you. Well, so are you.
Bye.
Okay, bye. All right, so let's get back to this situation. Just one other thing I wanted to mention. I know you're going to get into all of it, but I like to just bring out some of the most unbelievable things in this documentation that you've sent me. That one woman that you were speaking about, Melody Scott, they actually call her the Black Widow. And one of the things that amazed me was that this one person, this Dora Baker, was ordered by her physician to have a catheter placed in her, and Melody Scott basically refused to allow the catheter to be put in. Now, that's called practicing medicine without a license. How did that work?
What happened in this situation was that Melody Scott ordered it removed before the doctor felt that it was wise. And as a result of this, according to Johanna Baker, who was Dora Baker's daughter-in-law, this hastened Dora Baker's death.
There's no question. And let me just tell the people why. Because if somebody's had one of these indwelling catheters in their bladders for a long time, you can't just take it out and just, like, not even watch over them or whatever, because it causes inflammation at the junction of the bladder with the urethra, and that can actually get swollen shut to the point that they can't even go to the bathroom. And any of you that have had a full bladder, and you know how uncomfortable that is, imagine this poor old woman being in a situation where she can't go to the bathroom. And that is probably one of the most painful ways to die, because what's going to happen then is that the urine is going to backflow up the ureters into the kidneys, and the kidneys will eventually fail if there's no release of the urine. So that is absolute torture.
Well, this is what it appears that some of these conservators are doing, is essentially emotionally and physically torturing their clients to death. Now, you know, that's a very strong statement to make, but having been researching this system for quite some time now, I can say that with absolute certitude. I do want to mention, when I came down here to Redlands, I was calling some local attorneys, you know, to see their names on the cases as opposing parties to these care people. And I, you know, just kind of cold called some of these attorneys, and I got this one gentleman on the line, attorney, and I mentioned the name Melody Scott, and he goes, well, I can't figure out if she's pure evil or totally incompetent. And that from an attorney. Now, what I'm finding is the attorneys down here in the Redlands area are just in anguish the good ones are in anguish about what's going on in that court.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have done in San Bernardino, San Bernardino is, I believe, the largest county, well, certainly the largest county in California. And what they have done is they, mm-hmm. they have taken all the probate, and it is all being heard in the Redlands Courthouse. Incidentally, that makes it about two blocks away from Melody Scott's office. And that group, the care group, that's Melody Scott and Larry Dean and the attorneys, which are David Horsepool, Walter Moore, Craig Parker, well, they're just down the block from the courthouse. It makes it very easy and convenient for them because they are now doing most of the conservatorship and estate administration cases. They have the lion's share now of the cases. And there, I did find a document where Brian Hartnell, who was the head of the Hartnell Horsepool and Parker firm before it split and became Horsepool and blah blah and Hartnell and blah blah. He opined the court. He said, "Well, you know, it should be heard in another courthouse, but it'd be really more convenient for me if we heard it in Redlands." And so it got heard in Redlands. And very shortly after that, all of the probate moved to Redlands. Now, the problem here is not that we have a few bad apples, that we have a few abusive conservators. The problem is that the system is now contorting itself to accommodate the abusive parties. I have been looking through the accountings. I see the accountings are being protested by the probate examiners, who are the trained parties here to go through the accountings. They're protesting that the accountings are... The conservators and attorneys are requesting too much money, they're too high, and they're all getting rubber stamped by the court anyway. And it's worse than that because we have a situation here, and I refer to this situation as a real template for abuse, is what happened to one Elizabeth Fairbanks, who went under conservatorship with, once again, Melody Scott. This was an LPS conservatorship. She was an elderly woman, and she also apparently had some mental health issues. She also had, you know, about $200,000-$300,000. And what happened here was that Melody Scott signed a do not resuscitate order when she got conservatorship over Elizabeth Fairbanks. Now, according to the children of Elizabeth Fairbanks, this was something that was done independently by Melody Scott without consulting her client. Now, this is a matter that is now in dispute. I have spoken extensively with Mary Beth Fairbanks, the daughter, and she is adamant that her mother did not request a do not resuscitate order. I have the do not resuscitate order in front of me right now. It is signed solely by Melody Z. Scott. So what happened with Elizabeth Fairbanks is she fell ill with pneumonia. And according to the medical records, which are actually in Elizabeth Fairbanks' file, there was not appropriate medical treatment for the pneumonia. It looks like from the file there might have been two doses of antibiotics given in total to a woman who had, an elderly woman who had pneumonia. And unfortunately...
And let me just suggest something else for you to check out, Janet, because you see the way they're giving the elderly people pneumonia is with a pneumonia and flu vaccine. So that's another thing you may want to keep your eyes open for is in fact, did this woman receive a vaccine and then she got sick? And you see, that's such an easy way to take them out because these people are very frail health-wise anyways. And one other thing I just want to mention, because you made the statement that she has mental health issues. I guarantee you that what they're doing to these people also is they're putting them on all kinds of medications. And these elderly people cannot metabolize the medications, and this causes them to have dementia. This is a known cause of dementia for them to have these cocktails of different drugs. So wouldn't that be convenient? I'm sure they're hooked up with some doctors as well. You know, put Granny on drugs and then Granny has an excuse to be declared mentally incompetent, and that gives them a reason to be given even more power by the courts.
Well, you know, yes, and they're putting them on a lot of psychiatric medicine that doesn't appear to be appropriate. My own mother, under conservatorship, my mother had a Ph.D. in psychology and had worked her entire career as a clinical psychologist, and she had retired about years before Melody Scott got her crutches into my mother. And she put my mother first on antidepressants, then she put her on antipsychotics. I mean, they were just throwing, you know, psychiatric medicine at a woman who had been, you know, balanced and functional and active and happy her entire life. Now,
right.
I want to go back a moment to Elizabeth Fairbanks, to the cause of death.
Yes.
Now, I have here
mm-hmm.
in front of me what was filed in court by Mary Beth Fairbanks as to her mother's death. Here it says, no medical treatment. This is when her mother got pneumonia, and it looked like they were aware maybe May 2nd or so that she was ill. The conservator might have been aware as early as May 2nd. No medical treatment was given to my mother until May 7th. On May 7th, at 1:30 p.m., Dr. Raines ordered an immediate dose of the antibiotic Rocephin. And then they gave a second dose was given at 2 p.m. on May 8th, and that was it as far as the antibiotics. Now here, on May 8th, at 12:30 p.m., Dr. Raines ordered Roxanol-2 milligrams for pain. On May 9th at 9 a.m., the Roxanol was increased to 5 milligrams with this increased dose to be given immediately. My mother passed away approximately 2 hours after this higher dose was given. And this is the Roxanol is an opiate medication, and here opiate medication can cause the patient to go into respiratory distress due to the side effect of slowing the respiratory system. So what happened
mm-hmm.
was the mother was they increased the dosage of an opiate, and my mother's here by Mary Beth Fairbanks. My mother's breathing slowed after the Roxanol 5 milligram was administered until her breathing completely stopped approximately 2 hours later. Now, that sounds to me like a very problematic death. The do not resuscitate order.
Well, not only is that euthanasia, but it's euthanasia. It's murder, basically, because they're murdering this woman to get a hold of her estate.
Well, the interesting thing about this case was that at the time of Elizabeth Fairbanks' death, they had really pretty much run through all her money. So there wasn't anything more to be squeezed out of Elizabeth Fairbanks except her breath. Now, I have in front of me this Dr. Raines. I have in front of me an order written by Dr. Raines on Braswell's Ivy Retreat, I believe is the facility. Braswell's is where these care people tend to put a lot of their conservatives. Here says 7-1305. Theater emergency room for evaluation only for ALOC, that's altered level of consciousness. And it says, do not hospitalize, do not resuscitate, signed Victoria Raines, MD. So you have somebody who's ill with pneumonia, which is certainly not life-threatening, but not in the sense of cancer. Not that it is you know, without a doubt,
it's a treatable
most likely
condition.
Terminal. It is a treatable condition. Do not hospitalize. Do not resuscitate. But apparently give opiates so that the woman stops breathing when she's already in respiratory distress. So now I would like to say something. Now this case had a lot of documentation because the daughter Mary Beth was so aggrieved and outraged at what happened that she went to court and tried to fight these people. And she wasn't fighting for the money. She was fighting for an explanation of what happened to her mother. Now, the judge in this case, who is Judge Michael Welch, wrote a decision concerning the matter of Elizabeth Fairbanks. And I have the decision in front of me signed by Judge Michael Welch on July 11th, 2007, which I'll tell you, this judge is goose-stepping and mincing around what appears to be a murder case. It appears to be a murder case. Now, he just isn't addressing what happened at all. And, you know, he's just dancing around this like this is like he's dealing with fire here. And there's no...
That's what they do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, So we have a problem with the judges. We have the problem with them rubber stamping accountings, and the problem with them rubber stamping these problematic debts. And there are more. This Elizabeth Fairbanks situation is only one that I found in the files where it looks like the debts were problematic. And it only gets of notice if there's a family member who is aware that something's rotten in Denmark. If there is no family to even pay attention, then we have no idea what happened to these people. So what we have to deal with now is the level of complicity and collusion going on. Now, according to the district attorney's office in San Bernardino, there have been five counties where reports have come into the district attorney on Melody Scott. Five counties. And according to the district attorney's office in San Bernardino, all these reports are now being deferred to the California Attorney General's office. And would you like to hear what the California Attorney General's office is doing with reports, documented reports concerning criminal activity by the Melody Scott people? Well, they're
connecting
them.
Oh, yes, do tell.
Oh, well, see, this is where it gets very ugly. The Attorney General's office is now contorting itself in order to cover Mrs. Melody Scott's rear end. Reports that are now coming in to the Attorney General's office are being returned without a report number assigned. Now, let me explain what that means. When reports come in to a justice agency, even if they're frivolous or, you know, found to be frivolous, incoming reports are assigned a complaint number. That's a way of tracking the existence of the reports. At one time, reports were getting at least a report number concerning Melody Scott, but no longer. Several reports went in last March, and they were assigned to Senior Assistant Attorney General Mark Geiger of the California Attorney General's Office. These reports were received on March 6th of 2007 by Senior Assistant Attorney General Mark Geiger. They were several hundred pages of numerous different situations involving Melody Scott. On March 6th, the same day he received them, he put them back in the mail to the complainants with a letter saying that he does not have the developed criminal expertise to deal with these complaints. I have the letter signed by Senior Assistant Attorney General Mark Geiger. He does not have the developed criminal expertise to deal with the allegations of criminal behavior. Now,
it sounds like he needs to find himself a new job then, first of all. And second of all, I just want to state that all these attorney generals are supposed to have an elder abuse division.
Mm-hmm.
If this is not elder abuse, when somebody ends up dead and having their entire estate stolen from them, what more abuse could you possibly come up with? When it's done by the state.
Oh, well, yes. Well, legally, the definition for felony murder is murder that occurs in the commission of another crime, such as, a robbery. And if this isn't felony murder, I don't know what is. Now, the other significant thing about Mark Geiger's response was he didn't assign any complaint numbers. And when he was recontacted saying, okay, well, you don't have the criminal expertise, but where's the complaint number? Because that's how they log these in. We just didn't give it any. So what this means is
throw it in the garbage, in other words, rather than turf it off to somebody else. That's what they usually do. They just send it back and forth between different departments. But this is the most egregious way of handling it I've ever heard. Just don't give it a report number and just state that, I'm not qualified to take care of it, and so therefore we're going to ignore it.
Well, I would like to make the statement that I made at the time that this happened, and that is, Mark Geiger, if you don't have the developed criminal expertise to deal with these allegations of criminal activity, please go back to cleaning toilets.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need an attorney in the Attorney General's office. We don't need somebody who's a pooper, scooper, and hider. a pooper, scooper, and hider. Mm-hmm. So what we have here is our levels of complicity and collusion in cover-ups that's going all the way up the ladder. Now, I do understand from several parties that Melody Scott has been reported to the FBI. And as listeners may be aware, the FBI won't tell you if they're investigating. They don't give case numbers. They don't give agent names. You walk in and talk to them, and that's as far as that went to. So I want to make a comment here concerning conservatorship that may alarm those in the listening audience, but that this point needs to be made. Conservatorship is a way, obviously, of robbing someone of their rights to make their own decisions. Now, conservatorship is now being deployed against people who are neither elderly nor disabled. And I'd like to speak a moment about the case of Susan DeMuro of Portland, Oregon. Susan was married to Art DeMuro, who was an extremely wealthy man who very hooked up a developer. He owned companies, you know, that were involved in, I believe it was Medtronic. You know, this man had an enormous amount of wealth. And there was, according to the court file, at the point of divorce, Art DeMuro had his wife, Susan, who's 48 years old, a college graduate, mother of four, put under conservatorship, and Susan DeMuro was essentially robbed of her divorce settlement, which would have, given the amount of wealth that her husband had accumulated, would have been, you know, a rather a staggering amount. And she was given basically
and obviously his charge must have been that she was mentally ill, right? That's usually the excuse.
Well,
is that how he?
Yeah. Well, yes. Well, see, interestingly enough, there was an assault complaint filed by Susan DeMuro right before her husband filed for divorce, and as she so quickly went under conservatorship at the order of the judge, the assault charges were dropped against Art DeMuro. Now, Susan DeMuro is 48 years old. I have met her personally. She is bright, she's sharp as a tack. She's actually a beautiful, well put together and somewhat pissed off woman who is now conserved and cannot get out from under this. There have been psychiatric examinations done. I have seen the psychiatric examinations. Susan DeMuro seems to be pretty well put together, but she cannot.
Also, but I'm sure she also lost custody of her children, obviously,
yes, she
right?
Did. Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
Wow. That's pretty, if that's not underhanded, I don't know what is, but that's happening all over the country as well.
Well, it's a way, basically, of taking a person, you know, a lively, vibrant, active person and reducing them to a zero because a conserved person has almost no rights.
Yes. As a matter of fact, you stated in your reports that you sent me that they actually have less rights than a convicted felon.
Yeah, that's true.
Correct? Is that correct, Janet?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, we have another caller.
Hey, this is Elder calling from Georgia, Dr. Carley.
Hello there, and I want to thank you. I didn't get a chance to send you an email for the excellent post that you also added to that Washington Post diatribe that went on for an entire day. Thank you so much.
Yes, it's obvious that the Shield did not want to come on the air. I also wanted to state that
I know.
You might want to chime in at www.city-data.com/forum/Maryland and get involved in the forced vaccinations in Maryland thread over there in Maryland. Which is based on the issues going on in Maryland. I'm trying to get in touch with some of the people there that's involved in this issue, if at all possible, to let them know what their rights are and to get in touch with you and
Great.
Find out the facts from an expert court witness on what's going on. I really appreciate your broadcast. I really appreciate what your guest is talking about. Maybe sometime we can have you on our radio broadcast, too. So thanks again. I'll listen in.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for calling, Elder. And yes, Janet, I'll give you, I'll hook you two up email-wise, because Elder has a very excellent internet radio show as well. We have to get you out everywhere telling people about this, because this is so disgusting. And the fact that my profession is used to actually do the deed and to take these people out. And this woman that you were talking about that was placed in conservatorship, did they also force her to go on psychiatric drugs?
Well, she's really battling them at this point because they keep wanting to send her into more psych evals and more psych evals. You know, she goes through them with pretty much shining colors. I mean, there have been a couple of hitman doctors, you know, that have tried to say, well, you know, she scores well on the personality test, but, you know, she's obviously what? You know, the uncontaminated
right.
doctors have given her a clean bill of mental health, but the court is now battling her for more psych evals and more psych evals. And this is exactly what Susan Lindauer went through in terms of the mental health targeting. Susan Lindauer had been a reporter, a congressional aide. She was the cousin of White House Chief of Staff Andy Card, and she was working as an asset for the CIA in the Iraqi embassy before the war. And when Bush established his pre-Iraqi War Commission on pre-Iraqi war intelligence, she called the commission and wanted to volunteer her testimony that our country knew there wasn't any weapons of mass destruction. And within 24 hours, Susan Lindauer was arrested as a spy for the Iraqi government. And when that didn't stick, they wanted her to have psychiatric evaluations and remanded her to a federal mental prison hospital and started moving for forcible medication. The attack on a person's mental health is a way to bring them down to zero, because as you know, Dr. Carley, mental illness, or the perception of mental illness, is the only thing that a person can be treated for against their consent. So you attack somebody's mental health, you also are attacking, you know, their status in the world as a whole and incompetent person, and you can reduce them into a back ward of a mental hospital if you want to shut them up. And that's exactly what happened to Martha Mitchell during Watergate. So this is a very serious MO. It is being deployed against the elderly. It is being deployed against vulnerable disabled parties, generally who have money. And it is also can and apparently is being deployed in some sense against dissidents. So we need to understand what this is really all about. It is about robbery. It is about pillaging. It is about plundering and murder. And it is also about silencing people. Hello? Hello, this is Janet Phelan. Apparently we lost Dr. Carley. So just to close up, these articles, I'm writing a series of articles on this subject matter. They are being published in the American's Bulletin, which is a national mail out. It's not available on the web. And the paper is seated in Medford, Oregon. I would encourage those of you who have questions about this or comments to email me at janetcphelan@yahoo.com. And I'm going to spell that J-A-N-E-T-C-P as in Peter, H as in Helen, E-L-A-N as in Nancy, janetcphelan@yahoo.com. I'd like to thank you very much for tuning in tonight. I'm so sorry we lost Dr. Carley, and hopefully we can reconvene this at some time when the documentation is progressing. So thank you all, and blessings to everyone. Good night.